Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Once a month, Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles is on the program. She's back today and joined this time by City Manager Marcus Jones. As the state tries to return to something approaching normal during this COVID-19 pandemic, the city is working to help that effort along. We'll talk about the mayor's plans to help small business recover and the impact the economic slowdown is having on the city. And related to that, a proposed city budget for next year that has been unveiled, which takes into account lowered revenues because of the business shutdown, but which does not call for a tax increase. We'll talk about that and more this hour with both the city manager and the city mayor. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Mike. Always good to join you and tell our listeners that we hope that they're staying at the separation and stay at home and all remember all of that still in play so that we can continue to be healthy and well.
For those watching us on Facebook Live, we should note you're seeing the mayor and the city manager sitting, and we've measured it. They're 6 feet apart.
So, and we're on our cell phones as
that's
well,
right.
So that we make sure that we can be heard.
Right. Okay. So the governor has rolled out phase one of a four-phase plan to begin to return things to normal. It started at 5 o'clock last Friday afternoon. It will continue till May 22nd when, if all things go as planned, phase two will begin. Given the limited amount of testing that we've been conducting here and around the country, even though we're now ramping that up, and given the fact that the White House COVID-19 report has now placed Charlotte on a list of cities to watch as a problem place because we have one of the largest week-to-week increases in cases, are we really ready to reopen, Mayor?
I think those are two separate questions about what are we doing and testing and what are we doing to reopen. So let's start talking about this. The governor was very clear that we needed to make sure our hospital beds were available, that there was sufficient testing, that the places that are most vulnerable, particularly our nursing homes, needed to have coverage, and we needed contact tracing. And all of those metrics combined make for a decision on how far we should move. The governor has made an assessment or with his health and human services director, and what she is basically saying is we can move to phase one. He has made no commitment to any further phase, and I think he's being measured and deliberate, and I think that's an important aspect. Now, Charlotte, we're the largest city in the state, so I do not expect us to have fewer cases across the state, and I think that we're going to be one of those cities always looked at as a model for how we deal with this virus. And so we're working very closely again with the public health director, Gibby Harris, as well as the county manager to make sure that we're doing our very best. And I want to thank our citizens and our residents who are here because a lot of this depends on how responsible or how carefully they really abide by the protocols that are being sent out. And I know that we don't expect 100% compliance, but we do need people that are both in business and people that are at home to continue to focus on this. It's not gone away. And we see that across this country and internationally.
Well, that was going to be my next question to you. How do you think Charlotteans are handling this? Are they being responsible? Are they maintaining social distancing in stores and on sidewalks and in parks? Are they wearing masks to the degree, perhaps, that health experts would hope they would?
Yesterday, I did our Open for Business online segment where people in business can call in and get advice. And a number of those questions were about the masks. And so whether or not we should be doing this. Now, Mrs. Harris has said that she's not going to regulate that, but she's going to encourage it. And I think that any responsible business owner that wants to reopen and not have to close because of our behavior would say to people, you should try to use a mask. You should use a mask in my business, in my space. I
You know,
would first.
people have said that that would be difficult to enforce in businesses, and I'm wondering why, because restaurants enforce the no shirt, no shoes, no service rule all the time. So why would it be impossible or even difficult for a business to say you can't come in unless you wear a mask? And if it would make the business look bad and they're afraid about losing customers, wouldn't it be better for the city or the county health manager to say, that's mandated, you must do it?
Well, you know, it would be easier, perhaps, but I think that there's, as I said, there's an accountability and a responsibility in this community that we've always supported efforts to make sure that things worked well. And I believe that businesses can do this. They can say no shoes, no shirt, mask required, just like no bare feet. But I think we all have to understand, if we really believe the slogan, we're in this together, that businesses can do this without a mandate. We are trying really hard to figure out how to live through this crisis, this pandemic, and we need everybody to help us do our very best at accomplishing the goal until we have this vaccine.
Marcus Jones, you're the money guy, and we're going to talk about your proposed budget at some length a little bit later on in the program. But you're only too aware of what the economic impact of the shutdown has been, and we've only been shut down for 6 or 7 weeks. If we don't follow required safety precautions going into this reopening, and we have to shut down again, what would the economic impact to the city of Charlotte be as a result of that?
Well, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
To start off with, we have modeled this crisis with a aspect that we would have 3/4 of declining revenues. So the final quarter of this current fiscal year and the first 2 quarters of the next fiscal year, which would take us all the way until December 31st. So the assumption is no additional growth before then. In terms of what we're doing as a city, it's right along the lines of what you've said. Right now we're protecting our core services and our employees. And if we bring them back too quickly without a vaccine, without the proper PPE, without the proper protections, then all that we have done up to this point to keep our core services going could be lost. So the way that we ramp back up, whether it's the city government or the city in general, is very important.
And you're a manager. You've been doing this your entire professional life, running cities and various municipalities. Are we doing that? Is that what people above your pay grade are doing, in your opinion?
Absolutely. The mayor and the council have been extremely patient with me and all of our employees in terms of operations. And because we know that it's important to keep the employees healthy. For instance, we have alternating shifts to keep our employees fresh. You may be on week one and off week two. It's all to help make sure that operations continue. So I feel comfortable from where I sit, as well as I'm on a policy call each morning at 10 o'clock, which includes the health director, the hospitals, DINA, emergency operations, the school system. And we always start off with public health first. So I believe the policy group gets it and how important it is.
Mayor, I'm going to ask you a question that my neighbors have asked me to ask you. I'm often asked to do that, and I don't normally do it, but I'm going to do it this time.
Okay.
We've been picking
that
up.
That means I should sit up, huh?
That's right. Okay. The city has been picking up trash and recycling, but they only had one in the last 6 or 7 weeks of yard waste collection. I think that was on April 27th, and that pickup missed our street. So a friend of mine who lives on the street brought in a dump truck, and we filled it to the brim and took it to the city yard waste dump. If we're continuing to pick up trash and recycling, I'm sure we're not alone in this. Why are we not picking up yard waste at the time of year when people have a lot of yard waste? Sorry.
Well, not only do people have a lot of yard waste, they've been at home for 6 or 7 weeks, and they have a lot of time to garden, and they're trimming and doing all of these things that make our city a city of trees and beautiful, the azaleas and all of that. So I get it. And I want the number of your neighbor with the dump truck so that I can call him as well. I think that, again, one of the things that we have to do is change the way that we look at city services. And just because we are, we have done this in the past, can we continue to do that and still protect our employees who are providing the services from being contagious or being able to have the virus? And so we're being very prudent, because I remember several months ago when we first started this out, there was a discussion about the first public solid waste worker in New York City that died as a result of the virus. We don't want that for our employees. So we are being very careful. So yard waste is an important part of our city. I understand that. Out of my emails, there it's always in the top three. So the manager has said that we're going to go around again, but we're going to base it upon the schedule that works for the personal protection equipment that we have to have. Yard waste requires one person to drive the truck and one to two people, probably in your neighborhood, two people to pick up the debris. So we're looking at trying to continuously work around that, and just, you may not get it on the day that you would ordinarily get it, but it will happen. But
so,
the second thing is, we need to think about how we're going to do this differently so that we don't put people's lives at risk.
So to be clear, the difference between yard waste pickup and recycling and regular trash pickup is that yard waste requires people on the ground, not just the truck.
That's exactly
That's right.
Okay.
So we may, the manager has already said in this upcoming year that we're going to look at bins for yard waste. So there will be a time that we'll start experimenting and trying a different methodology. I just don't think we could have ever anticipated that our rose bushes would require a bin. And now we do. And now we know something different.
So the last time you were on this program, you pledged to make small business recovery a key goal. And last month, the city approved $5 million small business loan program for companies with up to 50 employees and a micro business loan pool of $1 million. You also created a small business recovery task force. And yesterday, that task force discussed approving $50 million in federally funded grant programs. Is there a question about approving federal money for this? What was the purpose of that approval?
Well, as you can imagine, those kinds of proposals don't come just in the middle of a meeting. Over several days, we worked with the city manager, the council members, to say, we've received approximately $154 million in federal funds that have to be expensed by December. What is the best and fastest way to use that money? And small businesses, unanimously among the council, that is an area that we know that people are suffering, and we're trying to determine how to best serve them, but you have to have money to do it. So, yes, the council has supported the manager's recommendation of $50 million, two phases, one for immediate and urgent needs, and then one later on as we begin to think, well, what's going to happen as we enter fall when we see the flu as well as the COVID virus impact us? Will there be other times that we will need to support small businesses? So $35 million urgent move immediate, and then another $15 million just to make sure that we've hit all the right spots as a result of this. The number one thing about this federal money is it has to be used for COVID-related expenses, and that's how we focus. We focus on using it for people that have been harmed and hurt, and we're using it in a way that complies with all of our regulations so that we don't have an audit and they come back and say, well, give us the money back. And then the final thing, we're using it with the advice of citizens that are in the small business world, in the housing area. And today's meeting with the housing group will show that we're committing $20 million to that effort.
We have to take a break. I want to come back and talk more about how this money will be distributed, how you get to it if you're a small business hurting, and how long it will take to get that money to you. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Mayor Vi Lyles and City Manager Marcus Jones about many things, including the budget, which we'll get to in a few minutes, the proposed budget for the next fiscal year, which takes into account the economic downturn we're experiencing because of the COVID-19 virus. So the task force met yesterday, and they're voting to how to spend this $50 million that the federal government is kicking in for COVID relief, and it has to be spent by December 31st, and it can only be spent on things that are COVID-19 related. And you mentioned, Mayor, that the first segment of this money, $35 million, it will go out shortly. It's designated and allocated for small business. That would come before a vote of the full council on May 26th. The second round, the remaining $15 million of that $50 million, would be decided later in the summer with money available September 30th. But a lot of small businesses are in desperate need of a capital infusion. And some of the programs that the federal government had put into place have been very difficult, if not impossible, for these people to access. They need it now. Why are we waiting?
Well, we had to, one, first get the appropriation from the federal government. But more importantly, my principle around this has always been to develop programs that you can implement. The federal government did a great job allocating money, but when they got ready, the banks weren't prepared, the businesses weren't prepared, nobody knew what the criteria, nobody knew how to make it happen. And we are very, I would say Charlotte has a reputation for doing well, and we're going to allocate this money, and I'm going to ask Marcus to talk about it, but we're going to do it when we say the ball is dropped. You can get the phone number, you can get the application in. We're going to do it right. So, Marcus, you want to talk a little bit about that?
All right. So, thanks, Mayor. Mike, the big thing with the federal funds is how they can be utilized, and the guidance, we're getting new guidance almost every day. So if you think about the next time that the council has a business meeting, would be that last Tuesday in May, and that is when the council would approve us receiving the funds to be able to be dispersed. But in between that time, we're working on the policies, the procedures, the programs to make sure that when this money goes out the door a year later, the federal government isn't coming back to Charlotte and saying that you use these funds inappropriately.
You have economic recovery proposals, I believe, for this money, six proposals for this $50 million, including grants of up to $25,000 apiece for small businesses consisting of 6 to 25 employees, award grants of up to $10,000 each for smaller companies or micro businesses with 5 or fewer employees, and starting a business-to-business grant program capped at $20,000 per recipient to benefit local companies on both sides of, these are your words, both sides of the equation by funding the recipient's needs for expertise in technology, marketing, and additional outside help. And there are other programs. That's all part of this, of how you're planning to spend this money, correct?
Yes. I want to say thank you to the members of the small task force, the citizens, but more importantly, the leadership provided by Julie Isel, James Mitchell, Tart Bakari, and Dimple Ajmera. So the business to business, if you recall, we had a Zoom meeting with over 400 people on it saying, I've been a consultant all my life. How do I connect now that I have lost my clients? That's business to business. I also think that with the focus on people that have been displaced from their employment through this time, how do they learn, if they can't go back to where they were working, how do we develop a workforce talent program that they can feed into and find the job that is available if theirs isn't? And then finally, you know, we talk about small businesses a lot, but I start thinking about the four or five close contact businesses that are really not scheduled even by the governor. If everything works smoothly, they wouldn't be back in business until almost August or end of July or early August. And so those folks under five people in that employment, whether it's the nail salon, the barber and beauty shop, we need to make sure that there's money for them. So we're trying to determine the best way to work with this. And the good thing is to have people like Damien, who is owner of No Grease. You've had him on your program. We've had him on our program. he's the kind of advisor that we need to say, okay, where does the money need to go? How do we make sure it's used? But I am, Mike, also a real proponent of letting people make their own decisions in businesses. And so we want to get the money to them. We want them to understand they have to follow the regulations that we have to follow. But after that, we need to give them the freedom to decide how to use that money best to get back on their feet for their business to be successful. So I'm hopeful that we have very few regulations and we get money out very quickly.
Just to give you an idea of the sense of the urgency here, we have a listener who has emailed us, Melissa on Facebook. When will the small businesses get the money? That's her only question. And you said that Charlotte does it right. So in addition to when will they get the money, how do they apply for that money?
So the task force members are looking, and have actually, after the meeting yesterday, they've asked the manager to get the procedures in place. But the guidance to the task force from everyone, just like Melissa said, is we need the money fast. So where we were going to do something like, well, we need to see your lease, we need to see your utility bill, we need to see your invoices, we're not doing that. We need to see that you're effectively a business through having your license registered with the state or whatever. And we're just going to ask for the minimal paperwork. And you can't imagine for small businesses, minimal paperwork is a real benefit when we're talking about what we're doing. So right now we are trying to take back all of those things that when people said, well, I got the application for the PPP and it was 4 pages long. I hope our application is 1 page and attach your business license to it.
So we're 13 days away from a city council vote on this on May the 26th. So on May the 27th, as a small business, where do I go to apply for this money?
So what I'm going to say to you is that's the mayor's responsibility. The manager's responsibility.
Okay.
He does that policy and the manager makes it work. So magic is going to happen somewhere in this time frame, but not magic. Real work by real people that understand what we're trying to do. Sure. Marcus, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think just set the stage for what the council is doing right now. It's very important, Mike. So there are only 36 cities in the country that received this funding. And we started to look at the cities that are setting the policy, and we don't see any of the cities. You have to have a population of 500,000 or more to receive the funds that are being as aggressive as the mayor and the council are in terms of getting the money out the door. So I'm not going to say that, I mean, the mayor really put me in a jam today with a one-page application, but we will learn from the lessons of the past and make sure that it's easy and that the money is successful.
But nobody still answered my question about how do I apply for the money? Where do I go to do that?
We will put it on our website. We're open for business. Open for business at charlottenc.gov. And as soon as we get a decision out, we'll distribute that information on social media. We're going to contract with people that have actually been coaching and providing technical assistance to our small businesses. You know, for example, the Women's Business Center. They actually provide guidance and coaching for businesses during this time. They are going to have a lot of that information, and I'm hopeful that when we give support aid to those kinds of groups, that they will have a requirement in their agreement with us that they serve first and foremost the clients that we've identified in most need.
We have a question from Ricky on Facebook, and this really should be a question for the governor, perhaps, but what justification do you have, he asks, for keeping businesses closed for so long? With South Carolina so close, money and people will flow out of the city and the county rapidly.
Well, I know that we're getting people to ask that question often, but I would believe that the governor has the best interests of every North Carolinian, and he understands that we have urban areas, and he knows where the border is between Charlotte and South Carolina. Even with all of that, we have to have an understanding that person to person, we have a responsibility to keep each other well. That's why we're asking you to wear a mask. We don't know asymptomatic people. We don't know who's positive until we get, again, going back, testing and contact tracing. Those are two factors the governor has to include in this. And so we are trying to protect the total population. And I understand this is really difficult. I know how difficult it is. But I have.
Can you actually do this? Unless South Carolina does exactly what North Carolina does, and Tennessee does exactly what North Carolina does, and Virginia does exactly what North Carolina does. Can you protect people? Because Rebecca on Facebook, as you were speaking, wrote this: "We will go to South Carolina to shop. It is absurd. 99.9% of the Mecklenburg area has survived this virus, including the elderly and the sick." And that's a sentiment that is breaking out across the country. Whether it's a good sentiment to have or not is up to the eye of the beholder. But that's happening around the country.
I think you just answered the question, Mike. This is something that is a sentiment that's gaining a lot of momentum, but there's also a lot of momentum when you start thinking about people with children and whether or not they want their kids out in a restaurant or in a department store. There are a lot of individual choices here. And so while we are trying our very best, the governor, the public health director, all of us are saying, let's look at this for the good of the total. And sometimes that just doesn't work for everyone. I understand the philosophy, and I know that, but there are states that are doing it differently. New York State, of course, upstate New York, they're beginning to look at it. In Virginia, the governor said, we're going to start opening more of southern Virginia than Virginia, the borders, that D.C. area. We are not out of this yet. And we talked earlier in March, taking it seriously. Now is the time to take it seriously, just in a different way.
So let's get back to the money, because this $50 million that people will have a chance to apply for beginning in late May is part of a $154.5 million amount of money coming from the federal government to Charlotte. So after the decisions are made on how to spend the $35 million first and then the remaining $15, that leaves $104.5 million to be spent on city operations. Marcus, define that. What are city operations? How will that part of the money be used?
So, Mike, in terms of city operations, I think you gave me a little bit more money than we have. So we have about $84.5 million for city operations, right? The other amounts for housing. So city operations is pretty simple. As we ramp back up buses, so right now with social separation, I can only have 20 people on a bus. So just imagine people are trying to get back to work, and they're at bus stops waiting 15, 20, 30, 45-minute intervals. So part of this money, when we talk about operations, is to help us perform standard operations with government, like buses and solid waste pickup. As the mayor and you spoke earlier about solid waste, one of the things that we'll do is get what we call one-armed bandits, which one person can drive a truck to pick up recycling solid waste as well as yard waste. So it's really helping us with general operations, including social distancing within this building. On any given normal day, there's 1,000 people in this building. That is just not going to happen in the short term. There's no way that we can have social distancing and keep people safe in the government center. So those funds will help us do retrofits, help us in terms of working from home, as well as general operations.
So if I have the figures right, and I may not, but if I have them right, $57 million is earmarked for CATS, and $135 million is earmarked for the airport, used to offset losses experienced by those entities during the stay-at-home orders. Is that right?
That is correct. And even with the airport in CATS, they have something that's special that the city doesn't have with that additional $154.5 million. They can actually use that for revenue loss. So if you start to think about it, CATS system is not even charging a fare right now. The airport is so far down in terms of passengers, they can use that for revenue. But right now, this CATS CEO is thinking more about that and using those funds for that revenue replacement as opposed to funds for additional service, or at least trying to get the service back up to where it was in February.
The airline industry, it's no secret, has been devastated by this, and revenues at the airport are expected to be down $20 million in 2021. The airport is self-sustaining. The city doesn't give it money. The money comes from airport landing fees, if I'm not mistaken. But the airport is also in a perpetual state of construction. and growth and expansion. So what kind of shortfall impact, how will this shortfall impact them in the next couple of years? And has there been any discussion, because airlines seriously are in trouble, of us losing the American hub?
No discussion about losing the American hub. So let's start with that. The $135 million that you referenced related to the airport, that also can be used for debt service. So the airport is continuing to do its construction, which is important. And the latest data about airlines just in general, that they may not get back to the February 2020 levels until maybe even 2022. So this is a concept right now in terms of the Charlotte airport. We don't see getting back to 70% or 90% of the pre-COVID passengers until even April of next year, but not even rebounding back to the February numbers, maybe not even in calendar year 2021.
Unemployment is at Great Depression levels nationwide. Unemployment in North Carolina obviously is soaring. What are the unemployment levels in the city and the county, Mayor?
I don't have those numbers, okay, Mike, for the specific unemployment for the city. I'm sure that at the state level we're inclusive. And as being the largest city, I would expect we're the largest proportion of that, especially in our hospitality industries, especially when it comes to the retail industries. Those are areas that have been impacted. I think I've told you before, the first person I met on March the 10th was a young woman that lost her job because she was responsible for sales to our restaurants. The restaurant shut down. They sent her an email. Thank you. Your services are no longer needed. They didn't say it quite like that, but it was pretty abrupt for anyone to get that message. And here we are today in May on the 14th. We are today, and here we are still in that situation. So unemployment, well, no matter what the numbers, we know that it is deep within certain areas of our business sectors. And we're working, again, I think that that's why that $35 million and looking at where do we invest in helping people find opportunities for new jobs, and especially this, you know, a lot of our essential workers were people that were making below what we would call a wage that's necessary for you to live in Charlotte. And here's an opportunity for us to help them be upward mobile, have some upward mobility, so that where they may have been working for $8 or $9 an hour, can we help train them and develop them for the new jobs that would pay more of a wage that allows them to be with their families and not work two jobs unless they choose to? So we're working on all of that. That's part of the $35 million effort.
When we come back, among the things we'll be talking about is the proposed city budget for next year, which includes no layoffs for city employees and no tax increase. Ta-da! We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mayor Vial Isles is with us. Charlotte Mayor Vial Isles and Charlotte City Manager Marcus Jones also with us, talking about all things City of Charlotte and mostly the COVID-19 recovery efforts. We're also going to get into the budget, but before we do that, here's a question that probably ought to go to Dina DiIorio and Gibby Harris, but since you're here, Madam Mayor, I'll send it to you. Nelson on Twitter writes that WFAE reported yesterday that the county has been using the University of Pennsylvania model in error. That's the model that predicts when COVID-19 cases could overwhelm hospitals. And it's been used to determine how to flatten the so-called curve. Evidently, we're well past the time when that is an accurate indication of where we are. And why are they still using it? Because accurate information is important, he writes.
You're right. That is definitely a Gibby Harris question. I heard the same story. So you've got a lot of good listeners for WFAE, and I think that that's something that we can ask the manager to address with the policy group, which is made up of the managers of all of the towns, as well as Dina DiIorio, the manager of the county.
Because our Steve Harrison with WFAE News reports that he spoke with the data scientist behind that model, who said it should only be used at the start of an epidemic, not when a region has entered what he called the plateau of cases, which is where we are today. And another comment before we move on to the budget from a Twitter listener for the mayor. Why don't you or won't you mandate wearing masks in stores and in public places? Why are city leaders and county leaders leaving it up to the stores? It's not fair. It puts too much pressure on store owners to enforce public policy. Why not just say you must wear a mask, period, full stop?
I wish that I were as powerful as most of the your listeners think that I am. Actually, the public health directives are from the public health department. And I do think that this is a debate that needs to be held, but I don't have the authority. And again, I would say that when you look at the policy group discussion around these kinds of issues, it is very tough because what we have in Charlotte is one big city and six towns, three to the north, three to the south. And we have to gather an input, and we're trying to make sure that we're consistent among our decisions for the entire county. So again, I'm going to ask the manager just to bring that up because that has been the number one question yesterday on our Open for Business, which is a ribbon on our website for small businesses. And I think you've addressed this twice at least today, this morning.
That Open for Business, I want you to give that website again, because that's a website that you referenced earlier with regard to how to get information about what the city is doing with all this money coming in from the federal government. You launched this in April, and it's a directory to help small businesses reach their customers, and it's got an interactive map, a dashboard on it. So give the address again.
Okay. If you go to charlottenc.gov, the banner at the top of the page, click on that banner, and then you'll be at the home page for Open for Business. And that site is going to change. It'll be more robust as soon as we get things out there. That's where we're going to put anything related to small business. So, again, charlottenc.gov, click on the banner, Open for Business.
And we'll put that on our website as well at WFAE.org.
Thank you.
So, Marcus, business virtually shut down here for 7 weeks due to this pandemic. How badly have our coffers been hurt in terms of tax revenue collections?
Mike, in terms of the general fund, which we pay our police officers, our firefighters, and the majority of our city workers, is really dependent upon property taxes, almost 56%. 57% of the revenue that we bring in. And the way that we do revals, that's been stable. It'll be stable for the next couple of years. Sales tax is another issue in and of itself. We project it's between a 25% and 30% loss in sales tax for the rest of this fiscal year. So that's been a challenge to close the book for 2020, which ends June 30th, as well as have a structurally balanced budget for the next fiscal year. So the biggest impact for the general fund has been sales tax. What's interesting in Charlotte, unlike some other cities across the country that are dependent on tourism taxes, like hotel taxes and food and beverage, those taxes do not go to the general fund. They're really in our tourism fund. So we didn't take as big a hit as some other cities because of the way that we've structured our taxes.
The hospitality taxes have been hit. I think they're down 85%. So what does that mean for the tourism fund?
Yeah, so for the tourism fund, as I mentioned to council earlier this year, all of the projects that have been approved up to this point are fine. But into the future, we have great limitations on what we can do because they are highly sensitive to that hotel tax as well as the food and beverage tax. So right now, for what we planned, is fine, but in the future, it's questionable.
The shortfall, as I understand it, it's resulted in a $21.8 million shortfall for 2021. If that's correct, you presented
correct.
Your budget for next year to City Council, and it amounts to $2.55 billion, the total budget, which is a 3% decrease from last year. Prior to the pandemic, what did you anticipate presenting?
I think it was a lot more.
you're really sticking it to me, Mike, this morning. Yes. So our council retreat, or the annual strategy meeting back in January, And as you mentioned earlier, I've been doing this for a while now, and I don't know if I'd been in a city that was on a hider streak. The council had their priorities locked in. It was housing, it was economic development, it's safety, it's a well-managed government, and then we have the crisis. So what we were able to do is just go back to those core services from a administrative perspective, but in terms of the council priorities, we stuck with those, and we tried our best to fund those in the short term.
So this amounts to about a 3% decrease to the city in terms of what money you're going to allocate to services, mm-hmm. and core services, et cetera. That doesn't sound like a lot of a decrease, is it?
Well, 3% may not sound like a lot of a decrease, but when you start to think about how much it costs just to pay employees, and how we have been growing over the past few years, 3% is a significant impact to the overall budget.
You know, Mike, I kind of look at it really simply. Your tax, property tax, the money that you pay on the value of your house, goes to make sure that we have a really great police department that can keep us safe, a fire department that is responsive and helps in so many ways, and especially I want to give a lot of credit to all of the chiefs and all of the folks that ran the EOC for over 60 days. Chief Johnson, Chief Graham, and Karen, and this is terrible, I can't remember her last name. Bottom, Chief Bottom. So thank you very much for the work that they've done. And then there's the solid waste pickup part of it and the transportation. Those services are essential, and that's where we invest our property tax money. We do a lot of other things, but generally, those are the four columns that hold us up as a city.
You also promised Marcus Jones not to dip into the operational reserves, because that would be your word here, irresponsible. How much is our rainy day fund, and why would it be irresponsible to dip into it?
Well, Mike, it was. Let's go back to the budget presentation. Given where we were, that we did not dip into our operational reserve, that we had a structurally balanced budget, it didn't make sense to all of a sudden then go back into your operating reserve to pay for services. And the key with this reserve, and it's a best practice across the country, you should have 2 months of expenditures in the bank at any time. And to just go into those reserves because you can, as opposed to having those for operations, is what I would say is not a best practice.
Well, the good news here is that this budget, however you did, whatever magic you used, this budget does not raise taxes. It does increase monthly water fees by about $1.25 a month. It raises solid waste services by 80 cents a month. You're not going to furlough or lay off any city employees, at least that's the plan now. And some of those employees would be eligible for a 3% up to 6.5% raise over the course of several months or years. Revenues are down. Taxes are not going up. You're not dipping into any reserves. Where are you finding the savings?
Well, the two pieces, Mike. The first piece is, you mentioned the shortfall we were dealing with. About 40% of the shortfall was just made up by the actions of departments being able to cut expenses. So kudos to the entire team for that. You mentioned the solid waste. That went up because it corresponds to the tip fee that we're being charged. And when you put those two together, we had about a $9 million gap that's left over. And we made two small changes. One, we have this fund that's called PAYGO, which for the past few years, we've been able to do some extra things in that. Like some of the things we did would be aging in place, or maybe some innovative things around housing. And then we took what we would do with the general fund for street paving and move it to the debt fund. So those small tweaks have some impacts in the out years, but that's how we balanced the budget, structurally balanced it for 2020. And I do want to say that about 80% of that salary increase is going to public safety. And if anything we learned in the 2008 when we stopped providing increase to the public safety, it really impacted us. And because of the plan that we have now, we have a 25% decrease in separation from police and a 24% increase in applications. So I think we're doing something right around public safety.
So if this budget gets passed the way it is and no further corrections have to be made to it because of any further economic problems beyond your control, how will ordinary Charlottesians be impacted by this? What will we notice, if anything?
Well, we'll be a little slower in terms of the responsiveness to maybe permit and things of that nature because, and I'll use the one example, and hopefully we can get through solid waste today. And solid waste and the what we're doing with the debris pickup, this is such a great team. I have people from transportation that are driving solid waste trucks in order to pick up yard debris. So a lot of what we're doing is with being down about 150 people in the general fund vacancies, what we're doing is we're not going to ramp this thing back up. You may see some bags under our eyes as we try to limp through this, but what we're trying to do is keep people safe and provide core services with the team that we have in place today.
I'm going to shift gears here a little bit, Mayor, because this is a question that's been coming in constantly from us, and I'm sure you've been getting similar questions. The Republican National Convention has been controversial almost from the moment the city council said, yes, we'll welcome them here. COVID-19 has thrown yet another shadow onto this. The Democratic Convention may, in fact, they've moved that convention in Milwaukee to August. I think it's now scheduled to be the week before the Republican convention here, and they're talking about making it virtual. The president has said the Republican convention will absolutely be held in Charlotte. Of course, that is subject to change depending upon the medical situation, but this week, Ronald Brownstein, the national political reporter for The Atlantic, tweeted this, mm-hmm. quote, "Again, the message to Charlotte could not be more explicit. Trump is rejecting mask wearing plus other forms of precaution as kind of culture war. The city faces the prospect of thousands who reject any form of social distancing on ideological grounds. At Vi Lyles, ready for that?" What's your response?
I believe that this city is resilient. I believe that I am resilient and that we will do this under the guidance of public health first and foremost. I am never going to be worried about, the ideology hasn't changed. And so it's just, well, can we blame it on COVID or can we blame it on something different now? But when we made this decision, and I know how difficult it was, believe me, it is in my top three emails, probably number two right now, after yard waste. But I continue to work with our city manager, our police chief, and our governor to say, this is a convention that is scheduled for August, and no matter what happens, it will be scheduled under the regulations of the pandemic that we're experiencing. In addition to that, I think that you have seen that we have not just the RNC coming, but we've got other conventions that we're encouraging to book, and I am saying the same thing to them, that we have to follow the public health regulations, and we'll do that. So I think that it's a good time to write about it. It's getting closer. You've been in media for a long time, so it's a really good tweet to do. You put in RNC, and you're like, boom, 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 on social media. And so, but I'm just going to say this. I think our community did this for the reason that we've hosted two conventions. The way that we react and what we do will showcase who we are over the next to the international world. So my goal is for us to do this in a way that maintains our public health awareness and creates an image for our city that works well.
Okay. We just heard that Charlotte Pipe is moving to Stanley County, which opens that land to make it available in about 4 or 5 years to a new stadium. Have those discussions begun? Will you be asked for a tax break on the land? Will you be asked to help in building a new stadium? Are we ready to do that?
You know, I don't think that I've ever gotten in the middle of a sale for property in Center City, Charlotte. I wish I were a realtor in that regard or a developer, but I think that I want to say first, Charlotte Pipe and Foundry, great company, great opportunity for them, great opportunity for our sports team.
Okay, but you'll have to come back soon because we want to talk about that. We want to talk about Eastland Mall, and I know that's moving through the pipeline, but people are upset that it hasn't been more transparent. Maybe it will this afternoon because you're having a meeting about that this afternoon that's open to the public virtually. Mayor Vi Lyles and Marcus Jones, our city manager, thank you so much for the hour. Stay safe. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.